Welcome to That Doesn't Work Anymore, the digital marketing podcast by Ad3. When you're looking to stand out online, the rules are ever changing and yesterday's strategies just won't cut it. Each episode, we'll tap into the brains of our in-house marketing experts, peeling back the layers of the latest trends, tactics and strategies in 2024. But it's not just about what works, we're here to uncover what doesn't. Let's face it, in this fast-paced digital world, your business might be pouring valuable resources down the drain on outdated approaches. We'll reveal the pitfalls so you can save both time and energy for what truly matters. So buckle up, get ready to deep dive, and let's kick off the show that will revolutionise your approach to digital marketing. Welcome to That Doesn't Work Anymore.
Welcome to the That Doesn't Work Anymore podcast from Ad3. My name is James Hamlin. I am with Ad3 out here in the UK. First time regular listeners would have heard a British accent on the pod, so welcome to you all. I've been working in the digital marketing field for many years now, and SEO is something that I've been involved in various degrees for a long period of time. I've worked on SEO with Brian Rauschenbach across many areas many times over the years, so it'd be great to be having a chat with Brian today.
Yep. Hey, James. Brian with Ad3. I'm the Chief Media Officer. And same thing. I've been working sort of in this discipline, let's say pre-Google is the way I like to date it without giving you an exact time period. And it's a topic that's sort of been near and dear to my heart. It's sort of how I got my start in the industry and just really excited to sort of explore the topic and kind of see where things have started and where the trends are going and just to share some of that with you guys.
It would be great for you to say that you worked pre and post Google, but don't worry, we're not going to go there with a conversation that would be a bit too heavy. So look, it would be great if we went back a little bit to just contextualize the conversation. And the theme of this podcast is to address some of the things that people think about and maybe dive into some of the misnomers that maybe they should be thinking about. And SEO has been around for marketers since generally they started on this journey. So Brian, if we maybe just want to sort of go back a little bit and sort of fast forward up to speed now, where the discipline has gone, maybe mentioning some of the main phases, moving into mobile, the introduction of site content, the updates that SEOs have gone through and businesses have gone through. And maybe we can kind of bring up to the conversation up to now. So kind of like, what are the kind of the major sort of trends and humps that we've kind of gone through as an industry with SEO that sort of brought us up to this period?
All right. That's a 30-year window that we're looking at, I guess, or almost that.
Yeah, just condense into a couple of minutes, if you would.
Yeah, there we go. I think the biggest talking point when we sort of take a reflection backwards in time is, you know, title tags and technical SEO and on-page stuff still matters a lot. I think the nuance is really in sort of what is the content, where you're getting these signals from, how you're building that content. And as much as it's really interesting to see all the trends with AI and machine learning and wanting to utilize these for time-saving purposes, we're seeing a lot of, you know, what you had just already covered, you know, the algorithm updates have addressed spam or thin content over the years. And now we're getting to an era where we are wanting to auto-generate content to just take shortcuts. And that also has its new filter with the machine learning that, you know, we have always sort of built our business around. How can we get inside, understand, unpack the algorithm to benefit our clients or projects that we're working on. And the short of it is that there is no shortcut around that. You still need to create a quality website with quality content. And we've been saying that for 20 plus years, and it still holds true today.
Yeah. And I think, look, we'll chuck out some terms that may be familiar to people deep in SEO and some other broader marketers less so. But I think, look, one of the key inflection points, if you go back, it was probably coming up 15 years now, was kind of when Google really got into the kind of the quality content world, right? Mm-hmm. Which prior to that was a world of, yes, links were important and they still are, right? In various guises. But that was when we started to see the updates start to take place. Penguin, Panda were the big ones that still make a lot of marketers wake up in a cold sweat. But it was Google basically saying, like, right now, this is going to be about quality content that updates frequently, that's unique, and moved you away from fewer tactics, hacks, tips, tricks that got you to that particular point in time. And it was going to be about content quality that was going to be ingested by Google. And again, we saw a similar approach with similar engines, you know, that followed Google's prominence, you know, LinkedIn, Facebook sites of this particular time. And then we've kind of been on that content run for many years now, pre-AI, right? But you could kind of say that the need to now create the amount of content that require the machines that are now becoming more and more prominent of really kind of like serving that purpose, if you kind of see what I mean. So it's like, is content and the quality of it that you're seeing it, where is that in terms of where we are? Is that changing quickly as AI completely changed everything overnight? Like, where does that sit in things?
Well, I mean, the advice that I've been given a lot of clients and other folks is to slow down. It used to be sort of like a content production farm. You just wanted to catch every single topical signal within your vertical so that you could, you know, strengthen your head terms and then feed off a mid and long tail. And now it's kind of the exercise is that the algorithm's smart enough to know when your content is good, the dwell time that's on that content, the frequency, how many people are visiting, staying, sharing, and all those little micro signals and, you know, also the experience stuff around how well is this piece of content able to be connected to other related pieces of content. If you think of sort of a news website, you read an article about a topic, you usually through vertical scroll could see three other articles that are related. Google likes that stuff. It creates long clicks. It makes people sort of stay on websites longer, and it's a better user experience. So I think the user experience signal is probably really tall right now as what it used to be. It used to be just like, hey, you've got a lot of content within this topic. We're going to give you on our scorecard, if there was even a scorecard, you know, a lot of relevance around this. And then you would in turn get traffic, organic traffic from it.
And are you seeing, because look, SEO has been a brilliant way for websites to grow and grow ultimately without a large media investment, which has been amazing. What's the kind of general state of the union, you would say, in terms of not only the clients that you talk to or the industry professionals that you talk to in terms of SEO and its prominence? Because, you know, historically it was always mission critical, right? That you'd have a strong SEO footprint because that would leverage paid media activities that you wanted to go with it. But obviously now Google vertical search is the way to look into the world. Is the world isn't like that right now, right? Whether it be YouTube as an entryway or voice or whether it may be, and we'll probably get into some of that. Where are you finding kind of clients, and this is a general question, are sitting on the SEO prioritization? Client by client basis, still as strong as it was, more uncertainty, like where are you positioned in that?
I don't think the uncertainty comes in play that much, but I think the ability to beat the algorithm, the biggest deterrent right now is that, you know, can you as a brand cut through and still show up for head terms? It's a pretty hard game in that realm, right? So like, if you think about clothing or e-commerce websites, there's so much query volume around research terms. So if you were a website like an REI or an outdoor research, and you want to show up when someone's in a research phase looking around for jackets that are made out of down or synthetic fabric, those are queries that you typically wouldn't buy in paid media, because it's super top of funnel discovery based keywords that don't have high conversion value, but you want to show up for that. And so like old content models were driven around finding content gaps like this that you wouldn't particularly pay for in paid media, make sure that you develop a content footprint behind it so that you could show up for that. The problem now is that you're competing with every other brand doing the same exact pattern. And can you beat the big boxes in this game? And that's where the algorithm, for me, I feel breaks, and it only rewards the big guys and not really the smaller brands that might not have a massive footprint within that topic, but they do really well within it. So like if you're REI, you make gloves really, really well, or jackets, but can you compete against the Amazons and the larger big boxes?
Makes sense. And look, you can take various sources of traffic to people using Google. And again, we joked about it at the top of the show. This is the year that sort of Google loses its prominence. And clearly, I'm sure we'll talk about ChatGPT at some point in this conversation. Mm-hmm. But it feels like the ability to win and the opportunities on web search still feel very prominent because the quality of the customer, right? Mm-hmm. The quality of the customer, the ability to kind of cut through versus newer platforms such as a TikTok, which has its own version of SEO, right? Mm-hmm. Which kind of took some of the Google principles and sort of adapted it and made their own signals around it. But are you still finding that people still understand the prominence of Google? But and I guess putting sites to one side that are app only, which is a different kind of conversation, are you still seeing brands focusing on that prominence, number one, and still seeing that as a prize that is worth going for in 2024 and beyond in terms of, whereas the rules may have changed, the ability to win and succeed in Google remains to be gained?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like they're almost getting back into a passenger seat, if I could use that as an analogy, of just making sure that they just have best practices in place and checking as many boxes as they can. And then, you know, the focus has definitely been, we've seen the trend off of SEO because there's so much unknown ahead of us with, you know, where AI and content is going to be impacted. And so I think there's a lot more watching than actually doing right now.
And that makes sense, right? Because I think, like, we also need to throw in the macro into this. And I can remember, you know, many years ago when Google started to prioritize content and the quality of content, it also coincided with the shift of journalists moving from traditional print journalism into more online focused journalism, but also businesses understanding that there was a value to be winning on Google and ultimately mm-hmm. could put a monetary price on it, right? So then what you'd find is you'd find, you know, the growth of content teams, content divisions, the overall quality of content that would be created, right, has been, you know, pretty amazing. And certainly mm-hmm. versus years ago when, as I say, we wouldn't be making that. Each brand now ultimately to cut through has to make that content commitment. And I think the challenge with then, say, the ChatGPT arrival and its growth has been this concept around, like, okay, we have machines to help with that now, but ultimately not to replace that content, but the intention being the people writing content of real quality, this can act as the idea stimulus, the kind of like the assistant, the helping lift the grunt work, that type of thing, right? But clearly then that becomes to a point where other sites are using it just to create the rudimentary volume. Back to your point you originally said, that to create millions and millions of pages, and then we're now starting to see these updates come in, and we saw the update at the start of March, which are attacking that, I guess, with site de-indexing, which is quite brutal. But like, the tough thing with this as it pertains to AI, it feels like this is still so early. And as you say, what should people be doing in the short term versus the long term, as well as trying to keep up with this stuff? What do you think?
I mean, shoot, I said best practices, but I mean, it's really tactical best practices. Is we're going through and re-auditing websites that have been, you know, up in living properties for 10 plus years. A lot of our focus is and attention has been on information architecture. And so just making sure wherever you are winning, that you're at least holding ground there and making sure that your site speed is good, your mobile usability is good, any kind of signals that you are sending to the engines are on high quality content, and, you know, building the authority around whatever topic you want to show up for. And we're also sunsetting old content, like a proactively ahead of the algorithm going, hey, look, this looks like thin or poor content. We're going to go and just de-index these pages. We're going ahead and just saying, you know what, we're seeing some traffic on those pages, but man, that article was like 8-10 years old and it's not even topically relevant anymore. And we're either refreshing it if it's something that we still want to rank for, or we're sunsetting it. And so it's just a lot of housekeeping is what we're doing as SEOs lately.
And links have always been a prominent signal. Where do you see links going? More prominent, less prominent, change on how acquired? Like, where does the whole kind of link acquisition piece sit within the SEO framework right now?
Well, I have always been, at least in the last 10 years, an advocate against link building. I think that's sort of the only area where I could see that it could help escalate things is if you have a brand new website. So if you came to me and you were like, I'm launching this new commerce property and I need to get SEO. And it's like, okay, well, you need to start building signals. And where do those trust signals come from? It comes from reputable or quality backlinks. And for me, I just call it link earning, and it needs to come from press coverage or article mentions that are sort of related to whatever your business is. And so we just say, hey, go out and make sure you guys are getting good coverage around your business, just to establish some trust signals, more than, hey, we're trying to beat this algorithm.
And I'm glad you mentioned press coverage, because, you know, hopefully we'll do a podcast about PR at some point, because again, I think that's gone through a similar type of journey, because PR became incredibly it's clearly always been prominent, but started to intertwine into the SEO world for lots of reasons that you describe. And I think as people's consumption of news changes and they're kind of position themselves on different platforms changes, it's interesting that you're still calling out the ability to gain quality coverage, as you would say. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty interesting constant, I would say. And on a similar type of question, and I think, look, again, we've seen so much conversation about this on SEO over the years. Where do you think social proofing kind of sits in this? And just, I guess, to explain my perspective on this. So articles that are engaged with on various different types of social platform, that's been something that's discussed about how important a signal, not important a signal, and that is. What do you think that sits today?
I think it's kind of a collection of signals that you get from social proof. So it's like, I think of it more like how reviews come in, and you're like, okay, I'm going to click on this SERP because it's showing that there's, you know, 2,200 reviews, or, you know, whether it's a restaurant or a book or album that you're interested in buying. And so to me, it inherently has trust built into that. And so I think that's why a lot of snippets in the Google search results reflect that, because at the end of the day, they are trying to get the user to have the most seamless experience to the content that they are looking for. And so for sure, those social proofing signals come into play in the algorithm. Where they're weighted is the big question.
Makes sense. And to stay on the kind of Google and I guess the AI question, like, and if you had a crystal ball to predict this, you know, you'd probably be quite well off. But where do you think Google's next play is in this? And again, it's started to make updates, removing, in theory, sites that have been leaning on AI theory. But going back to the Penguin Panga updates, it was always the threat, right? To wield that power and muscle. They've taken several kick-ins in the press about their responses to GPT and Bard and all the things it spat out. And you could say, you know, some may take the perception of like, they're not necessarily leading on this, but also you could take another perspective to sort of say, look, you know, they're so far ahead of understanding the information that's being generated, right? They kind of understand this fully. Like, what do you think their next kind of play is in this understanding? You know, they've bought the Bard engine out, that's done what it's done. What do you think they're thinking about? What do you think the next changes we expect to see maybe over the next 6 to 12 months as it relates to kind of not just updates, but going on to more sort of like core usage?
Oh, God. Yeah, that crystal ball would be nice to look through. The one thing that I keep on keeping in my rearview mirror and always trying to look back at it is what Google's doing with zero-click results. And, you know, the zero-click results are basically someone does a search mid, long-tail, head term, and they don't even click on a result because they already got the answer there. And I think that that's a very interesting play for brands to be showing up on, even if they're not getting the traffic, because then they still look like an authority to Google. And if you are a consumer and you're like, oh, every time I do the search, Nordstrom always shows up as a result, when I go and purchase this type of whatever it is, a garment or whatever, I'm going to probably go to Nordstrom because Google trusts them. And so like, I think that all the intent signals and all the machine learning and AI stuff that they are rounding the corner on is going to help the user experience a lot. But it also, like you said, it might be the death of a search engine. So, you know, it's kind of a thin line they have to sort of walk.
Yeah, the zero-click search thing is really interesting. And I guess you could draw a parallel with the amount of music that gets released these days, right? It's like the vast majority of it gets listened by nobody. And I think Google's philosophy was always to make a better web, not a web of just more useless stuff in it. But the counterpoint has clearly then become is that we can create things so fast now, and we can create websites that would have taken months to create in minutes now, right? So it's the push and pull, isn't it? Like a case of one of the reasons people are so many zero-click websites is the fact that, you know, there's people out there gambling, right? Probably have machines at work making thousands and thousands and thousands of websites a day with one page on it, just trying to, it's a new evolution of web spam, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's kind of wild, you know, to think, when was the last time you did a search where you didn't see a sponsored ad on it, you know, especially around a topic like travel or something? And I think that that is kind of a weird thing as SEOs, like we say, hey, we want to come up for these blue link searches where there's no sponsor listings, because if you gain one, two or three position on those pages, that could be, you know, 30% of the search query volume that's going to you organically at no cost. And then if you were going to go and buy those keywords, it always was really suspicious to me that like, there's no advertisers on this keyword. If I go into Google as an advertiser and I put 5 cents, they say that the click is worth 65 cents. And so my ad won't even show up because their internal algorithm just wants to make money on the paid side. But yet there's no advertisers. So shouldn't the auction be starting at one penny?
Yeah, fair point. Really, really fair point. And look, a term that comes up a lot now that maybe marketers outside of the SEO sphere would be less familiar with is the EAT acronym, expertise, authoritativeness, trustworthiness. Is that just like a DNA strand you're putting through everything that you're approaching right now? Or is that something that you're just having to continue to address and fight with?
I mean, I originally thought this was going to just be an acronym that was trying to shake us up to just stay on a sort of a quality seat when we're thinking about developing new content. And now it pretty much is something that we preach continuously. And, you know, this acronym's been sitting around for 10 plus years. And it's just basically, I always look at content with two different lenses. I say, is this an evergreen piece of content or is this a pulse-driven piece of content? Did you just create this because a news article or some trend is coming out and you want to make sure you're capturing queries around it? Or is this a piece that you could continue to build off of or reintroduce annually? You know, is it a, hey, how do I, you know, cash in my 401k retirement plan? What's the tax ramifications in 2023? And then next year you have the 2024 article version of that. And so they are really you showing subject matter expertise. And then are you an authority on that topic? Do you have like 10 articles written behind that same exact topic? And then are you a trustworthy source for this? Are you writing about something that your business also reflects? Why should I trust you as a consumer that whatever content you've produced is honest content?
Yeah, and it's funny, isn't it? Because you find yourself, what I do, I'll use a data point of one, find myself using search in a different way in the post ChatGPT world, right? Because for the first time, or maybe not the first time, because I guess you could ask Jeeves and we can remember that, but it's like, we've moved from, you know, Google trained us, didn't it, to be like, I'm going to Google it, I'm going to search for it, search, I'm going to find my answer, sometimes quickly, sometimes not, into this world of answer optimization, right? So from answer engine optimization, which is different. So in terms of, I'm going to search for it, but now you find yourself as a user just asking the question, be like, right, I just want to ask the question, figure out the search for me. Like, you have to assume that's a trend that will continue, right? And again, the stats of ChatGPT usage aligns with that. You see that in SERPs in the way that they're presenting, right? It's kind of like, because it's net, once you use ChatGPT, it's kind of like, well, it makes you lazier, right? In the same way that these machines make you lazier. Like, how do brands then sort of prepare for this presumably continued rise of like answer engine optimization versus search engine optimization? I'm not saying it's a first, they align with each other, but like, how do they equip themselves for more answer engine optimization?
That is a fantastic segue into just sort of like where the future of AI and machine learning could be beneficial for marketers, is that at the end of the day, that's the one area that Google's not delivering the promise. And so say I was going to be in London for 2 days and I wanted to visit record stores in a certain district that was nearby my hotel. That today would be a ChatGPT question for me. I don't have the faith that the engine would be able to return a good enough result set. I might get a map result that has pins in it that are just record stores, but I feel like I could ask ChatGPT to give me the 7 record stores around Shoreditch within 2 kilometers that sell hip hop records. And I probably would get a very, very, very good short list of results. And I don't have the confidence that Google could deliver that today.
Yeah, it's still got to the point. It's never really nailed the real-time search piece, has it? It's just, there's just different kind of platforms kind of monitoring that. And again, like, we find ourselves in this situation where things are moving so fast. And again, we'll have various different podcast episodes in this series about various different disciplines of marketing that are moving very fast and evolving. And it can sometimes get quite bewildering. Like, are there some still key tools, platforms, disciplines that you're still hanging your hat on and be like, right, yeah, we're still doing this. You know, that still works for us. Okay, don't worry, it's evolving, but we've still got some tried and tested methods and tools and disciplines that are using. Anything you're still hanging your hat on that you have been for the last couple of years?
I mean, we're both old school and I feel like everything old is new again. And so like, I live by that mantra. And I feel like if you're just doing the baseline best practices, fundamental SEO, you're going to at least keep Google happy and play by the rules. Don't get lazy as a marketer and be really careful if you do have anyone externally creating content that you're taking a deep look at sort of, you know, was this written by the person or was it generated by the person and, you know, flipped a couple times to work for your audience. And so just be really careful on that side of things and get back to the brass tacks, which is really around user experience, technical SEO, title tags, headers, body text, all that stuff still matters. It's still in the algo. It's on a scorecard somewhere and it's still very relevant. Take a look at how you are showing up in the SERPs. You know, a lot of times you're inside your own box and you're not really seeing what your world looks like. So take an outside perspective, have people look for your brand and get from them how they're discovering you, what keywords are coming in to even search topically for whatever you're selling or whatever your service is. And it'll help you glean a lot of insight to something that you might have just been staring at too long.
Yeah. And look, lots of content you'll see online, and I went to a great talk last week about this, is just sticking to this term about the AI tools being an assistant, right? Helping helping you with the heavy lifting, adding perspectives, allowing you to do that. Like, where are you at with that, Brian? Is that a sentiment that you're echoing?
Yeah. I mean, look at how long it used to take us to do a slide presentation. You would build out templates, everyone would be adding to the slides. You could ChatGPT in seconds to just help you generate some ideas. And even just in terminology that you're trying to use on positioning certain stuff. And so I would use it as an aid tool and not necessarily the engine to build whatever you're trying to get out of it. So, and it's just, you know, just be very careful, especially if you're presenting any of this stuff forward, that you're fact checking a lot of it too, because, you know, at the end of the day, it is sort of regurgitating content that's already sort of out there that hasn't been fact checked in all practical matters.
Yeah. And look, one of the things we like to do on this podcast as well is to sort of focus on, like, this is going to finally be the year for insert buzzword. And again, like, I'm not a voice operated person. I don't use Alexa. Maybe I should do, and people kind of do it, but feels like every year, in the way that years ago it used to be, this is going to be the year of mobile. This is going to be the year of mobile. And that came true. But we've been hearing, like, this is going to be the year of voice search, right? Some statistics, I saw some stats from UpCity was telling me that 50% of the US population uses voice search, right? Mm-hmm. That seems high, but again, they have stats and I don't. But, like, where do you stand on the voice thing? Like, is this going to be the year of voice search? Are we going to... we're not going to have a choice? And then presumably, if that is the case, then position one, if you become voice search becomes way more dominant, clearly becomes even more prominent, right? Because you're not seeing a list of results. You're seeing a returned result that you're just assuming is correct without a way to fact check, right? Where are you at on the voice thing?
I think it has its play in certain businesses. Obviously, like you said, like the on-demand style thing of, like, I just landed in your city. I'm looking for a Thai restaurant near me. I'm going to use voice search for that. Or I go to a map and start walking aimlessly and turning left and right to see which direction a restaurant is. And so I think that in that application where you just need a sort of an immediate result, whether it's weather, time, starting music, checking stuff, fact-checking things, voice search has its play in there. As a matter of, like, research and shopping and those behaviors, I don't know how much impact it'll have. You know, I could be proven wrong, but I feel like, you know, I've unplugged all my voice assistants at home because I feel like they're listening more than I'm using them. And so...
I'm glad it's not just you. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, my paranoia's run really high. I feel like I could say the word parakeet right now and I'm going to start getting served parakeet food in 2 days. And so that part of it to me feels very intrusive. And so, like, for me, when I'm using voice search, it's for very, very mundane, quick delivery things, nothing that's really research or intense based.
Got it. Makes sense. And maybe to sort of to conclude, because we've covered lots and lots of ground, and clearly there are debates about all of these particular topics, and we try not to go too deep into this because, you know, the inevitable brain combustion, but to sort of leave us with some kind of, like, closing points around your position around the topic. And you're clearly still an advocate, and that's incredibly encouraging. But if you were to sort of, if there were the marketers out there, and maybe more of the generalists, you know, I'm sure some of the deep expert SEOs will be like, oh, you know, we'll be able to sort of really dive in some of these points. And there's a World Wide Web for that. And that's amazing. But more of you kind of like your CMOs, your directors, your people that want to kind of keep on top of this sphere and kind of understand that sort of impact, but also want to know, as, you know, budgets get tighter and teams aren't nearly as big as they might have been, and you have to make some decisions, like, what are a couple of the key sort of takeaways that you would leave someone from this podcast?
Good. So some closing notes around that is really, like, we've got a lot of experts in this field, right? And a lot of naysayers also. And so for me, I always utilize, I say, like, if you're an in-house SEO, bring in an agency or a consultant or a friend or whatever. Sometimes that helps your echo chamber be a little bit more heard. And so, like, if you're saying, hey, we should have, you know, changed these alt tags for all these images years ago, and now, you know, Google Images is 15% of our organic traffic footprint and no one listened to me. Sometimes it's good to just bring someone from the outside in, and then that voice gets a little bit more stern and taken seriously. And there's all kinds of stuff still, like that example of just Google image search. The algorithms, again, are getting so advanced that the image detection, the video detection, all of a sudden hashtags are back in play in a lot of video stuff. And so just making sure you have all of your bases covered, even if that's not even your segment. Like, you know, if you're like, oh, that's the video creation department, that's totally different. I don't get rewarded from that. Well, you would get rewarded if you had a really good how-to video embedded on one of your evergreen pieces of content, and you basically could both be winners by just, you know, looking across the office to see what other people or projects are working on and how that might be able to benefit both of you guys. So I'm always a bit advocate fan of like having the paid and organic teams sharing as much information data as possible, because there's so many gaps that haven't been filled by a lot of brands, and it's usually because they're head down, just trying to make things happen.
Got it. Okay. Look, long live SEO 2024 and beyond. We didn't get to the post-Google topic, but I think we've had a really great conversation and discussion today. Click like, share, subscribe, listen to the podcast. We have some great episodes in the back catalog as well. And thanks for being with us, and we'll speak to you next time.
Yeah, see ya.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of That Doesn't Work Anymore. If any of the topics we explored today left you hungry for more, reach out to us at ad3.com/contact. Stay tuned, because we're gearing up for another exciting episode of That Doesn't Work Anymore. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, keep innovating and keep rocking that digital marketing game.